Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. Doubles against the Nets.
Wade at a crossover. Wants it, feels it against Bogdanovich. They clear the side. Here's Wade with a hit and shoulder fake to the rack. Baseline right. Counting the foul. Oh, my goodness. Dwayne Wade just took Bojan Bogdanovich to school.
First time I met Chuck, he was actually the radio voice of Michigan basketball. And Chuck and I became friends, and then Chuck moved on, and we did the Raptors for a period of time. Now he's doing the Bulls, and always, personally, always liked Chuck a lot. Very, very much. Chuck Swirsky with a call on WMVP in Chicago. With the call of Dwayne Wade and one against the Nets. Bulls won at 118 to 88. All right, the Steelers get the Ravens after a bye week. They will play this week as they get back into action. I want to start on the defensive side of the ball, Neil, and we're joined by Neil Coulong. Neil, what about Cam Hayward? Not just him, but the domino effect of getting him back.
I think more than anything, with Hayward there, I mean, obviously, he's probably your best defensive player overall, so you get a boost with that, but it's more the lack of really a thin defensive line that you get if Hayward isn't there. I think that was more of the problem. I mean, Hayward himself is definitely one of the better defensive ends of football, certainly against the run. And that's really where the Steelers have been killed the last 2 weeks. When he wasn't in there, it wasn't a coincidence. They saw the opponent get 220 and 140 or whatever it was for the Patriots on the ground. Having him in there shores that up a bit. I think it might discourage teams from running, you know, religiously right at where Hayward's going to be. And I think with that, certainly a struggling Ravens offense is going to be weakened even more just with Hayward being in there. So, regardless of anybody else's injury status, I know that Hayward's not going to be the main headline in that story this week. I think the Steelers are most benefited by getting Hayward back as opposed to anybody else.
All right, obviously the headline guy is seven, so his ability to come back quicker than people realize has been is something that's been chronicled for years. What do you think?
I dispute that theory. I understand that, yes, Ben gets back onto the field faster than many people would. What I would argue against that, though, is his level of play in that first game back is never very good. I mean,
right.
You saw it last
good
year.
Point.
Against Cincinnati last season, he came back after missing a couple games. Some had said maybe it might have been a little bit earlier than they thought he would have been out. He was terrible. In that Week 8 game, they lost Le'Veon Bell as well. Ben was not good. In fact, I don't think he was good for another 2 weeks after that. Yes, him getting back on the field definitely speaks to his ability to, or at least his courage, in willing to get back on the field. And there is something to be said about the argument of Ben at 75% is still better than Landry Jones at 100%. But what we have seen recently out of Roethlisberger coming back after injury really is the Steelers are not going to get a great performance out of their quarterback. And I think that's really what we should be looking at this week, as opposed to, you know, Ben's a tough guy. He can get back onto the field. That's nice and all, but he's not putting up, you know, even a typical Ben game when he's back. He's well below average.
All right, yeah, that's a great answer, Neil. Now, within that answer, you talked about, you know, Ben being back, would he be better than Landry Jones? What do you think in the games that you've watched when he's come back? And you said he hasn't been really that great when he's come back that first game or two. Is Landry Jones a better option based on what you've seen in past performance?
You know, it's real tough, but you've got to bet on seven in just about any situation.
Right.
The bottom, the basement level, I think is much lower for Jones. Jones can really, really beat you just on his own. The mental mistakes that he makes his erraticism throwing the ball. I mean, sometimes you just have no idea what exactly he was aiming for, how he missed the wide open target the way that he did. You won't get that as much with Ben, I think. And with that, Ben's the money guy. He's the guy that you've got to play. He's the guy that knows the offense backwards and forwards, and the team counts on him to execute it when he's out there. So with that, yeah, I think you do have to go with Ben, but I really don't think it's an incredibly optimistic thing to lean on playing against a backs against the wall Ravens team. The Steelers really just haven't figured out a way to beat consistently over the last couple seasons. It's tough. to me, that's really what it boils down to. You can't feel great about either option right now, but if Ben is able to play, he's the guy that they have to start.
Do the Steelers have enough of a running game that really negates the potential lack of performance by Roethlisberger?
That's really what they're going to have to figure out, and I think that's what this week is about. We saw a little bit better production out of the running game against New England, certainly, than they did against Miami 2 weeks ago, but it wasn't good. It wasn't outstanding. It wasn't really what they're going to need it to be if their quarterback is not going to be 100% for the next little while. That's not just Le'Veon Bell. Really, more than anything, what I've seen is it's on the offensive line. They're not winning the battle up front. They're not running power particularly well. They don't look nearly as crisp in their execution in the zone run game the way that we have seen them at different times of this year. And to me, this would be a week of challenging Maurkice Pouncey and David DeCastro. I'm not seeing great things out of either one of them to this point this season. And they're their money guys. These are the guys that need to lead. You know, they need to be the tip of the spear, that zone run game in particular. They're the big guys that can move down the field. They're going to have to win that up front, and that's never an easy thing to do against Baltimore. I think Le'Veon Bell last year had the first 100-yard rushing game the Steelers have had against the Ravens since Bettis. And even then, I think it took overtime for him to do it. So it's always tough sledding running the ball against the Ravens. But if the Steelers win this week, it's probably going to be due to the success they have on the ground. And if they can't establish that, I have a tough time seeing them win this game, to be honest with you.
Antonio Brown's a great player and obviously a flamboyant one. I mean, the shoes and the celebrations and things like that. In some ways, have you seen some diva-like attitude on him, and is that a possible problem?
Diva, I think it covers all manners of sins, especially from wide receivers. You know, I think there's a culture that sort of breeds that today. In other words, there are plenty of receivers that like the camera being on them. They like the endorsement deals. They like looking good with their helmet off, whether it's on the sideline or you know, in a commercial. They want to be the stars. They are the stars. You know, the game is really it propagated itself over the last decade and a half to boost the wide receiver position. Is Antonio Brown a diva? Yeah, I'd probably put him in that category. I think there are worse, and perhaps most importantly, maybe this is really what the root is. I don't think he's a negative kind of diva. I don't think he's drawing too much negative attention to himself. Right. The cleats he wears during the game, that doesn't draw a penalty. If that's how he wishes to spend his money to you know, pick up some attention, from a business perspective, I get it. I see what he's trying to do. His celebrations in the end zone, those do result in penalties sometimes, and they certainly don't help what the Steelers are trying to do. He pushes the envelope, and I think that's one area, you know, I think for the sake of the team, they'd like him to improve upon. But overall, you're looking at a guy that works probably harder than anybody else in the team, and he produces when he's supposed to produce. He's a big-time player. And with that, really all you're talking about are celebrations. And, you know, come on, let's be honest. You look around the NFL right now, an entity that should have bigger fish to fry going after people like Antonio Brown for what they're doing seems pretty trivial overall. So to me, it's hard to suggest that would create a real problem in the locker room. I don't think his teammates would really get up in arms about it. There are going to be some purist fans that really don't like it, and I understand that perspective. But he's not a toxic guy. He's not drawing the team down in any way, I don't think. And on top of that, he's one of the most productive players in the game. So if the result of that is a 15-yard penalty for you know, twerking here and there, I think I can let it slide.
Is there an area of the football team that is better than you thought it might be? And is there an area of the football team that isn't quite what you thought it would be?
It almost might be the same answer in a way.
Okay.
There's a front seven in a defense, and there's a back seven in a defense. I know that there's not 14 players on the field, but mm-hmm. your linebackers plus your secondary, I think, from a coverage perspective, I think that's a little bit better than I thought it would be. They're still not consistently wrapping up and tackling well. They're giving up, you know, more yards than they probably should after the catch. But there have been times this season where they've done very well with that. They've tackled the catch consistently where the guy is catching the ball. I mean, it kind of gets to a point in an offensive-heavy focus of the NFL. They want guys to catch the ball. They want quarterbacks to be clean. They want, as much offense as they can get. Guys are going to complete passes. It's a completions league. So really, in many ways, a defense moving forward over the course of the season is going to be better or worse, depending on how many yards after the catch these guys get. I think the Steelers' back seven has done a good job overall in coverage and overall generally in tackling. At the same time, it'd be a lot better if they did tackle more consistently. And it's not just a yardage thing. It's more moving the chains. It's more, it's basically the screen game against Philadelphia was horrendous.
Right.
A huge part of the reason they lost that game is because they flat out lost the running back in the backfield. And to me, a lot of this really points to Lawrence Timmons. He's a player that obviously has been with the Steelers for a long time. He's, as true an Ironman as you're going to get in today's NFL. He's lost at least a step. He doesn't look to be as strong as he used to be. He's in trouble. He's really struggling. And I think teams are picking on him because of that. I think that more than anything else is leading, a unit that probably should be better than where it is statistically, down to a level that it's costing them games, or at the very least, they're not able to compete in games because Timmons is kind of a liability. So it's frustrating to see that, because the improvement they've put in from a schematic perspective as well as a personnel perspective doesn't shine quite as brightly as I think that it probably should have, all things considered, to this point in the season.
What are some of the swing factors against Baltimore?
With Baltimore, it really comes down to owning the line of scrimmage.
Right.
And it's not even just the running game. I would say it's choking the Ravens out at the point of attack, right up front, not letting them do anything else, making Joe Flacco become a very one-dimensional player. You take away that play action. Time and time again, we've seen against anybody, he's not nearly as good a quarterback. He's not a guy that really creates a whole lot for himself down the field, but he's got a great arm and he's fearless. He will bomb the ball down the field 15 times in a row if he has to, and they'll eventually get one of those, just like they did in that overtime game last year. That's really what it was. I think they tattooed Flacco like 9 plays in a row or something like that, and then he hit a deep ball to Kamar Allen, Aiken, down on the right side of the field. It was a great play. It was a great throw from a good quarterback, but they kept giving him opportunities to do that. So when I'm talking about choking them out, they need to be able to control the ball. They need to be able to own the line of scrimmage, run the ball, prevent them from doing anything other than a Flacco 7-step drop and just, kind of heaving, praying down the field to see what he can come up with. They have not been able to do that recently, and that's a big reason why they've lost. That, and Mike Tomlin said it today at his press conference, you have to protect your quarterback. It doesn't matter what number's on his back. You need to be able to protect whoever it is. And they have failed to do that in a pretty significant way against Baltimore, to the point where you have to kind of worry about it. The Ravens' edge defenders are always going to be active. They're always going to be in the backfield. But if you can't win the middle of that line of scrimmage, you're going to be in trouble.
Neil, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for the perspective.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Always enjoy having Neil Coulonger on the show. Always do. Great perspective. Does a great job presenting it. But we'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Ben Roethlisberger in his career 11-8 as a starter against the Ravens. The only other quarterback to win against the Ravens is Charlie Batch, who's 1-2. Michael Vick is 0-1. Byron Leftwich 0-1. Dennis Dixon 0-1. Tommy Maddox 0-1, all since Roethlisberger's first start. So, except for the one game that Charlie Batch won, and I know Steeler fans think he won 8 games against the Ravens, he won 1. Roethlisberger has 11 wins, Batch has 1, and nobody else has 1.
Yeah, but Ben's lost his last 3 in Baltimore, and my concern is he tends to rush back after injuries maybe a little quicker than he should.
Yeah.
And the performance suffers, so that's my glaring concern I have going into Sunday.
Which quarterback has the fewest yards per pass attempt this season, which is not a good stat? Oh, I don't know. Colin Kaepernick? There we go. Okay, most touchdown passes through the opening 40 games of an NFL career. Dan Marino's 1 with 90. Kurt Warner, 2 with 86. Matthew Stafford, 74. Carson Palmer, 71. Oh, and tied with Peyton Manning, Derek Carr with 70. Hey, the Raiders' defense is 22nd in points per game given up, 31st in yards per game given up, 410+, 27th in defensive efficiency, and they're worst in the NFL in penalties at 103. They're averaging 16 penalties per game, including ones that are declined. Yet, why are they in right now first place? Because of Derek Carr. Carr has the highest QBR in the final 5 minutes of regulation this season. Carr, in games that are within 8 points, leads the league in touchdown passes with 16. One better than Matt Ryan, and 3 better than Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers. Completions percentage 2 years ago, 58.1, now 66.3. Yards per attempt, 5.5 in 2014, 7.2 this year. And as you know, how often have I touted Derek Carr on this show? Over and over. Okay, what does the league have so far? The league is averaging fewer turnovers through the first half of the season. I've talked about this. Why? Because everybody is so careful in their passing games. Hardly anybody... Guys like Roethlisberger stand out so much because he takes shots. 1.34 turnovers per game this year. That is the lowest average through week 8 of a season since the 1970 merger. But guess what's up? Penalties. 16.8 penalties called per game. No, 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 no. Was down around 12.5 to 13 in 2007. I mean, now you're up 3 full penalty calls a game. It's not good. Hurting the league. Let's see. Facing pressure. Andrew Luck, he's getting a lot more now. 28% of the time in his first 4 seasons, he faced pressure. Now he's facing pressure 36% of the time. How about that? He's had 12 different offensive lines this season in front of him. No unit has taken more than 25% of the team snaps. That's how tough it's been for him. I mean, that's the offensive line.
Yeah, speaking of quarterbacks that take shots, you mentioned Roethlisberger and Andrew Luck. How about Cam Newton Sunday after his game during his press conference talking about, you know, he's he has moments now where he's scared to even be out on the field.
Well, that's because of the hits he's taken.
And that may not have to do with offensive line play. I mean, he kind of brings it on to himself, wouldn't you think, with him running and...
There's always a variety of reasons. Yeah. Aaron Rodgers, 15 different players have caught a pass this year. Davante Adams, Randall Cobb, Jordy Nelson, Ty Montgomery, Richard Rodgers, Jeff Janis, Jared Cook, James Starks, Eddie Lacy, Trevor Davis, Alan Ripkowski, okay, Nile Davis, who was cut this week, Geronimo Allison, the former Illinois wideout, Justin Perillo, and Jared Aberderis. Needless to say, offensively, they've missed a few players. So there are some of the first half numbers, but the big one is the penalties are up to 16.8 a game. I'm sorry, but that part right there, you can control that. You can control that. You know what name I hear too often during the course of a broadcast? Dean Blandino, the head of officiating. Okay? You know, if the game's really going well, we should never hear Dean Blandino's name. Ever.
True refreshment can come in many forms. But it can only be found in one place, the Beverage Supermarket. Brewers Outlet in Sunbury. Along with their great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, they have lots of water, soda, fresh roasted peanuts, and an unbelievable variety of pickles at the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and your favorite snacks, too. Get true refreshment all in one place, the Beverage Supermarket. Brewers Outlet in Sunbury.
Join News Radio 1070 WKOK on Twitter at WKOK 1070. It's your source for breaking local and national news. You'll get a tweet of each story on WKOK and a link to for more info from WKOK.com. And you can find out the guest list for the Dan Patrick Show and the Steve Jones Show. It's another way to keep you informed all day, every day. If you have a Twitter timeline, you need to follow News Radio 1070 WKOK on Twitter at WKOK 1070.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on the show today, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Okay, time now for our sports bozo of the day. You'll love this. Justin Ermolowitz, of course, has been suspended for 7 months and fined $10,000 after they found that he gambled on 220 tennis matches. 164th ranked player in the world. Now get this. They're going to reduce the suspension if he seeks help from a psychologist. Huh?
So just lay on the couch for a couple of sessions and then...
Okay. I mean, okay. How about this one? You do it again, you're suspended for life. Let's try that approach. Oh, and you know what? Maybe you want to see a psychologist, by the way, so you don't have to, so you don't relapse into this. But you don't cut the suspension down. That's ridiculous. What you need in sports is that when you and I sit there outside of the World Wrestling Federation is to look at whatever the event happens to be and believe it's legit. Instead of having people throw matches or throw a game. You know, I don't care whether it's Rick Kuhn at Boston College with Henry Hill of Goodfellas fame, or the Northwestern Iowa football game in 96, or the three Northwestern basketball games, Wisconsin, Penn State, and Michigan in the, I want to say it was the 95 season. I think the Northwestern Iowa game was the 94 season. With Deion Lee and the place kicker from Notre Dame. What the heck was his name? Kevin Pendergast. Or, you know, I mean, any of those scandals. Point shaving. It doesn't matter. Hey, you have to somehow convey to the people who are watching that your sport's legit. If you don't, then you're out of business. If you think it's rigged and fixed, you're out. And I've explained to you how they can go about doing it. You know, we talked about the Tim Donaghy case in the NBA. How they talked about, look, if you want to rig it, do it in the first half. Don't have it come down to a call where they draw suspicion to you. Now, the as we know, Paul Hornung, and of course Iowa's coming here this week, Alex Karras, Hornung with the Packers, and Karras, Iowa's own for the Detroit Lions, were suspended for a year by Pete Rozelle for betting on their own teams. And, of course, Pete Rose has a lifetime ban for betting on his own team. Now, the betting on your own team argument has been one of the more comical arguments I've ever heard. Every time I hear somebody say that, I just want to laugh out loud. I'm like, are you kidding me? Really? On the surface, well, yeah, I'm going all out to win. Yeah, but on the surface, hey, the unintended consequences are across the board. The unintended consequences are across the board. Okay? Gamblers get information, for example. Say, for example, Sean bets on is playing in the game, and Sean bets on his team to win. Well, you know, Sean's going all out. He's going all out. So you're sitting a fan. He's going all out. He's going all out. What if Sean ends up in the hole? Deeply. And these guys over here that he's indebted to want to make a big score. What's the possibility that they then look at Sean and say, it's not happening tonight? Well, I can't. No, well, yeah, you really have to. You're into us for six figures, maybe seven. Okay. What, you know, again, the unintended consequence. I've talked about Pete Rose, the manager. I've used Rob Dibble 3 days. No way in the planet I can use him four. No way. I got money on tonight's game. You can give me a couple outs, can't you? Where the possibility is, by overusing him in a certain stretch, maybe in May, June, or July, suddenly he is not the same guy in August and September, and your team fades. Again, unintended consequence. I have an outfielder. He's 75%. If I hold him out one more day, he's not in the disabled list. I hold him out one more day, and you know what? Everything will be all right. Yeah, but I got money on tonight's game. I got to play him. Oh, unintended consequence. I've had a catcher catch five straight days. I now am going to have an afternoon game in 92-degree heat following a night game. I need to win today. I catch him. We're suddenly in July, and he may not be hurt, but suddenly in July, after playing six, seven, eight games in a row, including a couple of day games in 92-degree heat, he starts to fade in August and September. Because you didn't manage, because when you're a manager, you are not just managing the game. You are managing the game. You're managing the series. You're managing the week. And you are managing the season. Let's give Clint Hurdle credit where credit is due. One of the rules he has for his closer is that he does not pitch them 3 days in a row. Two's the limit. They must have a day off. It's his rule. These are all unintended consequences. That's why when I ever hear, oh, but Pete Rose, he bet on his own team. Really? So what? I don't care. Okay? If you read the print in the clubhouse, which is rather in large type, you aren't allowed to gamble, period. Okay? There's no fine print that says, oh, by the way, if you bet on your own team, it's okay. You can't gamble. And that's what, you know, this comes down to. People, in order to be interested in the games, have to believe the games are legit. They have to believe that everything is on the up and up. They have to believe that when they watch Jacksonville and Tennessee, they question their own sanity for watching it, but the game is on the up and up. So it's, now there is a, now look, sports gambling is something that's, I think is going to happen, okay? I think it's going to happen. It's not going to be now, it's not going to be next year, but I think at some point, I think the door is going to open to it happening. Okay. But you've got to keep the game itself, the sport itself, clean. So this guy's throwing matches. I mean, he's throwing matches. So they suspend him for 7 months. Okay. But they're going to reduce it to 3 if he seeks help. No, seek help, and we'll keep it at 7. Oh, and by the way, you do it again, you're done for life. Let's try that approach. You don't reduce the suspension because they seek help. You tell them the suspension is 7 and you are seeking help. Because if you do it again, and we know about it, you are done. Sometimes I don't understand how this stuff is handled. I just don't. Overnight Monday Night Football ratings, not good. 7.2. Bears-Vikings down 18% from the Colts-Panthers game last year, which was 8.8 on ESPN. So it's down 18%, but that's better than it was because, remember, they've been down 24% for the season, so 18% is kind of a victory. Here have been the, we talked about the primary complaints. So here are the primary complaints. Okay, first of all, the NBA opener, up 10% from last year. Cavaliers and the Knicks, up 10% over last year. Now, of course, they've got the star of stars in LeBron James, which is going to be attracted to begin with. The NFL, of course, has had a flurry of negative off-the-field stories. Domestic violence, Deflategate, and, of course, the national anthem protests. Domestic violence is an off-the-field issue with baseball players. But the national anthem protest and Deflategate are exclusive to football. Deflategate, they could have controlled. They should have let it go. Didn't. Won their big victory. Suspended Brady for 4 games. The Patriots are playing, is it Seattle? In a Sunday night game?
Yes, not this Sunday, but next Sunday.
Okay.
Correct.
I predict that'll be the highest rated Sunday night game of the year. Watch that rating for Seattle, New England to equal what the normal rating is for Sunday Night Football. First of all, you get Seattle, Russell Wilson, okay, name brand, and Tom Brady. I think that will be the game where NBC sees the bounce back to normal Sunday Night Football ratings. Time of the year is perfect. So it's going to be, what, November 13th?
Yeah, right in the middle of sweeps.
Right, there's no competition. Okay, the World Series will be over. The there's no Cubs Indians, any of that stuff. Nothing. I mean, there's nothing in its way that night. Nothing. I think that'll be the one that gets them to what is normally a Sunday Night Football rating. Nothing's going to help Monday night. Matchups aren't great. Too many penalties. Monday night's sliding. Thursday night is oversaturation. And then there's the story about ESPN. I mean, this is nothing to do with Thursday, but ESPN, I mean, they've lost 620,000 subscribers in the last month. That's not good. And baseball beat it out on Sunday night. Now, of course, the Cubs and Indians, I think that's a special circumstance, but it's still not good. It's still not good. I think it's one of the big stories of the year. What happened? Look, the NFL, there's been a lot of self-inflicted damage. There are not a lot of outside circumstances that have hurt the NFL, right? I mean, think about it. What outside circumstances hurt the NFL? It's all self-inflicted. They decided to run it like this, and this is the consequence of how they're running it. They're turning people off. Oh, well. Meanwhile, you know what's thriving? Obviously, the World Series is thriving. The NBA is thriving. And college football is really, college football seeing increases. Number one show for Saturday night, Wisconsin, Ohio State. Number one show Saturday night, Penn State, Ohio State. Number one show last Saturday night, Florida State, Clemson. It's winning its time slots. And winning big, by the way. Not to the same rating level of Sunday Night Football. No. I don't want to confuse people on that. But they're winning their time slots by wide margins. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Penn State, Iowa coming up on Saturday night at 7:30 airtime, 6 o'clock here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Thanks to Neil Coulong for being on the show today. I am the one who foul-balled the Gary Danielson interview that we had set for tomorrow.
No, you did no such thing. No.
My schedule kept us from doing it. After I stared at his jersey at Bruno's for 2 hours on
Friday night,
Friday night. Yes. I was like, we were sitting under the Mike Allstott. Our table was at the Mike Allstott section.
Oh, when you think of Mike Allstott, I always think of Chris Berman when he did the NFL highlights, and he's like, boom, 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 bouncing off people left and right, moving forward.
So that's where we were sitting, but I was staring at Danielson's jersey. I think it was his Detroit Lions jersey.
Oh, not the Purdue jersey.
No, not the Purdue jersey. And, there's a gigantic Drew Brees section, in this place. Yeah, it was good. Everybody had a good time. And, of course, they had a good time. I paid. No. you'd be amazed how everybody's time got better.
That's what Jack said.
Jack kept going. He goes, and Jack says, do you realize every time Steve pays for dinner, we win? I said, I'm sorry. But the next couple of road games, I said, you're on your own. I said, and Rutgers, I said, I won't be there for dinner. So
that's right.
I won't be.
The double bubble with the Duke hoops.
That's a triple one because I got to be back Sunday to do basketball there too. So the initial game plan is to obviously do game, drive down, do football, and then my thought is to drive back after the football game instead of staying in New Brunswick. And the my reasoning is this. I know it'll be really late at night. It's a long day. But my goodness, the ability to go through New York City at that hour, go over the GW Bridge, unfettered with no traffic, is appealing. How about that?
Then you're not mad dashing it to the Sunday basketball game. So.
Right, yeah. That, you know, you get back, go sleep, you know. I'll still get up. I mean, I'll get the mass Sunday morning, and then I'll go do the game. And the game's either at 1 or at 3. Obviously, it depends. We won't know the time of the game till after we know the results of Saturday. And that's 2 weeks from this Saturday. That's how close it is. I mean, it is 2 weeks from this Saturday.
Yeah, Bucknell men's basketball starts a week from Friday.
Yeah, so does Penn State. Penn State's got Albany.
Yep. So, of course, we'll line up our weekly chats with Nathan Davis. He'll be back with us on the show soon.
Yep, I always enjoy that.
Yep.
I thought he was a really, really good hire. And Penn State's going to see Dave Paulson this year because George Mason comes in to the Jordan Center. So we've got that coming up. Let's see. Tiger Woods is going to play at a tournament in the Bahamas. Why not? Schwarber's back in the lineup as the DH tonight. He'll hit second. They're going to bump Chris Bryant down to third and Anthony Rizzo to cleanup. Familia, the Mets relief pitcher, arrested on domestic charge. And Jamie Collins admits he does not watch football. Perfect. He'll fit right in with the Browns. You can tell they don't watch any tape either. Just kidding. Ex-NFL referee says Cam Newton is consistently whining. Really? Mike Pereira is the one that said that. Whoa. Compares Cam Newton to Michael Vick. Says they both consistently whine. Now, it's amazing, when Vick was a Steeler, none of you Steeler fans complained about Michael Vick. The second he wasn't with you, you complained. You in the suit. One and the same.
I'd comment, but we're running out of time.
Yeah.
I say you just stuck that in there with under a minute to go. Sly.
Always.
Save it for the after show.
The after show is always where the suit excelled.
Award-winning.
I've always had people say, gee, I've never heard the after show. What a coincidence.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.